Hi, this is Damon Pastolka, host of The Faces of Business, where I talk with interesting people sharing life and business experiences to entertain, engage, build community, and provide information to help others succeed. If you're interested in learning more about one of our guests or how we are helping business owners generate wealth and build businesses they can sell or succeed at Exit Your Way, you can find more information on our website, exityourway.com. Or by contacting me directly, Damon@exityourway.com. I hope you enjoy the show. All right, everyone. Welcome once again to the Faces of Business. I'm your host, Damon Pastolka, and I am excited for our guest today because I got Devin Craig in the house today from Peterson Acquisitions. And we're going to be talking about incorporating your business exit strategy early. Devin, thanks for being here today, man.
Yes, sir. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Devin, it's great having you here. I just want to say that. I want to, first of all, promise that we are not going to get too rough on the business brokerage world, but we're going to probably talk a little bit about the business brokerage world and some of the things that are work or don't work in it. But before we go there, and we're talking about incorporating your business exit strategy early, let's talk about your history and how you got into where you are today and a little bit about Peterson Acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I guess, I mean, the way I got into all of this all started with and continues to be some pain, I guess you would say. The pain of working for someone else was just too much to bear years ago. And so my wife actually went off on her own, gosh, probably 10 years ago. She's a marriage and family therapist, and she's here in the South End where we live. And she's been doing a great job just killing it. So I was super proud of her, and I'm like, honey, I want to do what you're doing. I want to do my own thing, you know? And I was working corporate for a good long time, and it was good. It was fine. But I mean, when you have that entrepreneurial bug, man, it's so hard to work for someone else, you know? So I did, and it just kept growing and growing. And so finally started trying to build something on the side, you know, kind of a little coaching, public speaking thing. And it was going fine. It was good. But then we started getting a little busier. We adopted a couple of kids. And that was expensive and busy. And so I never really had that chance to kind of really try to build that up to something super big until now. I mean, essentially now I'm kind of doing that again in this iteration. But I got the idea through that process. I got the idea to maybe go buy a business as a way to just springboard full time into entrepreneurship. And so that's what I did. I just started shopping, and it took me like 2 years. And I did just kind of the YouTube education of following all the gurus out there that my now partner, you know, lovingly calls the gurus of the road. The gurus of the road of building the path of broken dreams or something like that. He says, basically, there's no money down business buying gurus. I think Richard Parker calls them the same thing, man. They don't love those guys, but I learned something from them enough to get some confidence to go do something, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I did. Yeah. Just on my own, started seeking things out and, you know, I was scared. It was like crazy too. It just took that first step of signing the NDA, then talk to the broker, then take the next step of going to have those seller meetings. Right. And so, yeah, it was a fun process. Learned a ton just through that process alone. And then eventually did find, landed on a business to buy. It took me about 2 years. I finally landed on a little, like a shipping logistics mailing type company, yeah, here in Washington. So bought that and then just love that entire process, the deal making process and getting in and just trying to, you know, get it fixed up, and which is what I was consulting other people on doing too, which was, you know, running a good team, running a good culture, running a good operation. So here I got a chance to do it myself personally, firsthand, you know, up close and personally in a business. Yeah. And did that for a little while. And I don't know, I just love that deal making process so much. I wanted to keep going on that. So I started shopping around for more businesses to buy, bought a second one through a broker who was on market. And then I then also started going, getting more education about this process. So I went back to those gurus I was learning from online and started to take their courses which were pretty expensive, to be honest. I spent a lot of
Yeah.
money with those guys, man. And there was good info in there, good content, but I think the statistics is something like 90% of people who take those things don't do squat.
Yeah.
And it's pretty sad, but I had already up to that point, bought a business or whatever. So it was kind of more closing the gaps and helping me learn more about, deal structuring and deal making, and helping me to realize all the mistakes I made in buying that first business. And so it was helpful on that front, but it did pique my interest in more of the deal making side of things. So I kept going with that, bought a second business, bought a third business, and then eventually I got kind of, pigeonholed a little bit into a sector, which is not a bad thing. It just now, if you want to continue going, if you want banks to back you, whatever, to keep buying deals, they'd really like to see you stay in that sector. And so that was the feedback I was getting. And so I said, okay, fine, I'll go try to find or do more deals in that sector. But, waiting for something to get listed on market that's in a specific sector of a specific size or whatever, I mean, you'll be waiting a while, right?
Yeah.
So I started actually to go out and do my own deal sourcing and finding deals of my own. And that was fun too. And eventually I started coming across people who are willing to sell their businesses, but I didn't want to buy them at that time for whatever reason, right?
Yeah.
Geography, your size, whatever, numbers. And so they started asking for my help to broker. And my first reaction to that was hell no. I'm like, I'm not doing that. And mostly because a couple different reasons, because my personal experiences that coincided with all of the gurus I was learning from, all of them were generally kind of negative about business brokers, right? And so when someone asked me to do that, I'm like, absolutely not. Yeah, at first was that, but I gave him more thought. I talked to a friend and a mentor who does some brokering here in Washington State. He owns a bunch of businesses. Super good dude. His name's Aaron Muller. I don't know if you've ever met him before, but he also wrote a book too, highly recommend, called Lifestyle Business Owner. And he does.
Oh, dropped out for a second there. There we go. There we go.
Sorry about
That's all right.
that. Yeah, so Aaron's a great dude. I started chatting him up a little bit. He was actually probably the most consistent mentor through this process of getting into this, buying businesses and whatnot. And chatted with him a little bit about getting into brokering. And then through that process is where I kind of found out through my research about Peterson. And when I found Peterson, and I learned more about what they're doing and how they do it and how effective they are, learn more about Chad Peterson. I was like, yeah, I'm not. If I'm doing this, I'm only doing this with someone like Aaron or someone like Peterson, because what Peterson's plan were very big plans. We have some very big plans for what we're doing. And so, yeah, I'm like, I'm only doing this with someone else like this or on my own, basically. But I knew I was going to go a lot further faster, getting mentored by, people who
Yeah.
are really good at this kind of thing. But even Aaron told me the same thing about, business brokering world is like, you gotta really, it doesn't, not that hard to stand out, but you gotta make sure you got a good process and you toe the line. And so
Yeah.
he taught me a lot really early on about that. But plugging into Peterson has been a phenomenal experience. It's been about a year and a half with them. I still own some of those businesses I originally bought, but Chad's really kind of taught me a lot of great things about other ways to look at those businesses as assets and how to use them and look at them accordingly, basically. So yeah, he's taught me a ton about that, but it's been a fun ride. Now I've got a bunch of business owners I'm now helping to sell their businesses, a bunch of buyers I've had a chance to coach and mentor and share my personal experience with. And yeah, my wife just said the other day, she's like, man, Devin, I think this is the most fun you've ever had in a job before and a gig before. And it's true. I just absolutely love what I'm doing right now. It's a perfect combination of all the things I've kind of enjoyed about the other pieces of things I've done before.
Yeah. This, oh man, we got so much to talk about here. We do. We've talked a few other times and it goes nuts. But so I love this because we're going to talk about incorporating your business exit strategy early in a moment. But one of the things you said, you've bought two or three businesses now yourself, you multiple businesses purchases. How many times do you really are you approached by business buyers out of 10? So say you get 10 business buyers that approach you. How many of them have the drive to get to a purchasing a business out of 10, do you think?
maybe half of the one, basically.
Half of
Maybe.
one? So like 0.5 of 10?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So few, so few.
I would, because we were actually talking about that today with my partner and I. Someone said business, talking about business buyers, and someone was brought it up to us, and we said the same thing. It's like, man, I don't know out of 10 if you can even get one out of 10, because the process is hard. It is hard. And I, like you, I'm sure business buyers approach us every single day, multiple times a day, whether it's someone that's investor size or just individuals that are looking for them, and just don't realize the, obviously, if you're buying a bigger business and you're an investor, you've done it, been down the road before, but most people don't realize how hard it is to buy a business. What do you think was the hardest thing? Because you did a lot of you did a lot of studying and working on it. Because most people just wake up and go, I'm gonna buy a business, and think it's like walking down the street and buying a car from the car lot. So what were the things that you, going into that first business, just try to find it and then actually get the deal done? What were some of the things that just stick out in your mind from doing that?
Oh man, just being like simultaneously freaking scared out of my mind. And also just having this internal drive and fire was like, this is what I'm gonna do because I know I want to go do my own thing. You know, I knew it. It was that entrepreneurial spirit and drive that every new thing that I learned got me more and more excited, right? Every next new step I took got over the fear of that next step and just did it, or went to someone like an Aaron and said, hey, Aaron, what do you think? You know, got like took got found mentors. You know, paid for education, whatever, like all those things like got me more and more invested in like I'm gonna do this, you know, like there's no damn way I'm not gonna do this. So yeah, I just had to take each next step. I had to invest in myself and put some skin in the game. I had to, you know, commit to myself that it was gonna be done. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. 'Cause there are so many steps, there's so many like nuances. So much stuff is so much more complex than going and buying almost anything else you could ever buy in your lifetime, honestly, you know, like and so it just required a lot, it just required that like that sense of like drive and why and mission and like I said, I had to just make sure I was actually invested in the process through myself and the learning and the education. But and a lot of that came after I already bought the first one too, honestly. So a lot of the rest of it was just that internal drive. Like I was more excited to get it done than I was scared of all the things that could go wrong. You know what I mean? Like the pain of being in the situation that I was in at the time, working for someone else, and all that was a very big motivating factor. You know, like just wanted to poke my eyes out every day, going to that job, you know, like I gotta get the hell out of here. I just gotta do it. So I don't know if it was sheer dumb luck or just yeah, like blind determination, or I don't know what it was, but I just knew I wanted to get it done. That was it.
I just it's you hit on one thing. I mean, if you're going to buy a business, you better be committed to doing it, because it is a grind. And even if you find the right business, I tell people if that come to us or going, well, I want to buy a business. I said, can you help us buy a business? And we don't help you find the business. So because finding the business that you want to buy is like finding a wife or a spouse. It's that hard. You can find all kinds of people that'll help you try to do it, but we don't feel good doing that and charging people to do it, because it is so hard. And it and we can show people the ways to do it. I mean, you probably had to ground and pound a long time to find the businesses that you wanted to buy.
Oh yeah. One local broker said that I broke the record for number of NDA signed with them, I think. So yeah. And eventually they were calling me and saying like they knew me to my name. They now know me not my name for sure, but they knew me by name at that point. And they would call me like, Devin, are you ever going to buy a business? I'm like, I did. I'm just looking for more. And they're like, okay, just want to make sure. But yeah, they were getting kind of frustrated to be honest. But yeah, because I did. I'd signed so many freaking NDAs, so many seller meetings. It was dozens and dozens and dozens. It was crazy.
And that's where people get frustrated right there, is like they can't find the right business. And you know, you talk to search fund buyers, and for those who don't know, those are, you know, MBA graduates or people with experience that are going out on their own with an investor background.
backer or a group backing them, you know, they talk a lot about 1 to 2 years minimum to find a business. And it literally takes that long, and that's full time for them. That's them having marketing people trying to reach out and find businesses for them and do those kind of things. And most buyers don't realize the difficulty in just finding one that just that you could say, it's worth $5. Does that sound reasonable to you? First of all, just the $5 part, and not even worry about the terms and all and getting through diligence and everything else. So yeah, good stuff. Could talk a lot more about that, but you know, we're talking about incorporating your business exit strategy early, and the challenge I think a lot of business owners really run into is they don't think about their business exit strategy. Do you find that that's a common thing among the people that you're talking with?
We talked about the number of buyers who are really driven, ready, like hungry, right? Like, I think there's even fewer business owners that have actually prepared properly the process of getting to sell. It's probably 0.1%. I mean, it's even less. I mean, it's a tiny fraction. So few are given any thought, let alone done anything about it. You know what I mean? Like, so few. It's so sad to me. And or they wait too late, or I mean, there's just a number of factors. Like, they just, long story short, is they just don't give it that full thought. This is a true story, by the way. I'm gonna tell this real quick. It relates to this, but there's a lot of other nuances within here. But
yeah,
I just got this news 2 days ago. It's actually a really sad story, but I mean, to me, there's a lot of opportunity here, and this is why we're talking today. But one of the businesses that I bought, smaller business, kind of in shipping and logistics, I just got the news 2 days ago that seller, he has 6 months to live.
Ah.
And he sold this thing to me, you know, a handful of years ago. And when I bought it from him, super nice guy, I really literally liked the guy, but you could tell he was really not happy. You know, he was bored, burnout in this business, didn't give a lot of thought to this. He just finally decided one day when he was old enough, decided I'm done, basically, right? And sold it for what he could and was ready to move on and was ready to start living only after he sold this thing, basically, is how I kind of how I interpreted that situation. And so here it is just a couple of years later, and he's got this terminal illness, he just found out about, basically, and now he's finally ready for that. So, I mean, most business owners, that's kind of how they treat it. Like, okay, I'm bored and burnout. I've done this long enough. Okay, now I'm going to decide that it's the right transition time. And it doesn't have to be only that way. Yeah. But I would just want to just encourage business owners not to wait till that time then to decide to start living or to decide that they're going to do what they want with this business on their terms, right?
Yeah.
And that's mostly what I mean. It's like most of them are not doing this on their terms. They're not deciding when this should happen. They're not deciding how this should happen. They're not deciding to make those changes necessary in their businesses to help give them some more freedom, which, by the way, I mean, everything we're going to talk about, if you make your business more sellable, you're ultimately also giving yourself more freedom, more independence from the business, more time to take a vacation. This guy hadn't taken a vacation until he retired, basically. Yeah. And all those things, it does not have to be that way. You know, like if you use the methodology we talk about, like just doing alone, exactly what we just talk about, or working with someone like you, either way, you're being more intentional with what your business is doing for you today and therefore making it more sellable. And then you're also even thinking about specifically, hey, when do we want to transition this thing? And why would we want to do that, right? Yeah. I have buyers regularly. One of the most common questions buyers ask me is like, why would this seller want to sell this business? He's making so much stupid money. And my response is always the same. It's like, well, why are you calling me if you've got such a great job making so much great money? Because you're bored and burnt out on it. You need to change. Like you've gone through that passion cycle. Now it's time to move on to the next phase of life. And so what's wrong with that? You know what I mean? So nothing wrong with that. It's just more important that we actually think about that more proactively, because most of these guys and girls are not at all.
Yeah.
They're not letting themselves dream and kind of imagine what could be next. You know, they're just not doing it.
Yeah. It's a great point. Just want to say real quick, we got Av on here. Av Rahman, thanks for being here today. And we got Riley. Thanks for stopping by. And I think, The second life starts when you realize you only have one. That's a wise comment there, because this is one of the things that I, you know, before I got into investor-owned businesses years ago, and really I was in family businesses up until then, basically. And they don't operate like you're talking about, or like we teach our owners to do exactly what you're saying. Is that business, yes, it's where you are working, it's how you generate money, it's all those kind of things, but it's just for one phase of your life, not your life. Mm-hmm. And getting your business set up right, like you said, gives you more freedom, makes it more valuable, easier to sell, all those things. But really, what I learned, the biggest thing I learned at working for investors, is that that's an asset. It's worth dollars if you do it right. And if I take the dollars from A to B, which B is higher, I might have enough that I don't need to worry about what I do next, or I can do whatever I want next. And that's really how, when we're talking to clients, it's like, listen, how much do you need to do what you want? Not when do you want to retire?
Exactly.
Because it's a different mindset when you step into a business and say, I'm growing value because I want to generate this kind of wealth for my next phase.
Spot on.
Exactly. And you know, when they do that, that business is no longer tied to them too, because it can't be. You can't make enough. It doesn't run well enough without you, and blah, 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 all the things you have to do. So when we're looking at that, how do you think it would affect these business owners that you're talking to if they incorporated their business exit strategy earlier?
Well, obviously they would, allow themselves to dream a little bit more. They would probably, make transitions and changes in their businesses more proactively and when they want, versus, when it's too late or when they're forced to or whatever, right? They can get busy living sooner in their life, just like that comment we just got, right? Everything gets better if they just kind of actually think with the end in mind, which is not necessarily to your point. I love how you said that. It's not the end of like when you're done working or whatever, which, by the way, I've not met one entrepreneur who's ever said, I just want to go sit on my behind for the next 15 years. Not one.
Yeah.
So why are they pretending like retirement is going to be this thing? Like most entrepreneurs are retired for like 10 minutes, and then they got to do something else or getting itchy. So if anything, like just knowing that and just thinking about that proactively, like right now I'm working with, so we have a capital company at Peterson, so we're buying businesses too.
Yeah.
And I've got right now someone who is really interested in being an operator for us. And so he's out there on the hunt looking for a deal. He found a deal right now, and it's out in the Midwest. And so he's just starting to talk to this owner and seller. And this owner and seller just like got a really good business. But he's working like crazy in this business. And just because that it's a second generation and that's just how it's always been done kind of thing. Right.
Yep.
And I think when this younger guy approaches him and starts chatting with them about this, like there's this identity crisis thing. And so he knows he needs to do it. His kids don't want to take this thing over. And he's got this young, smart, hungry guy approaching him and saying like, hey, we're a safe, trusted pair of hands. Let's do this. And yeah, he just can't wrap his mind around it, but guaranteed he's not going to be done. He's only mid-60s. He's an entrepreneur. He likes working hard. What we could do instead is maybe get something with a little bit less demand, go buy an ice cream shop, or you maybe not need money anymore, especially not after we pay you. So fine, go do something you'd want to do. If you always want to own an Italian restaurant, great, go do that. Do you want to move to Florida? Do you want to move somewhere sunnier? Like let yourself dream and imagine a little bit about what could this be like? And to your point, it's just the asset at that time based on what the needs of your life are at that time.
Yeah.
And so embrace that. And you can even think about that even years in advance, even.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait until you're like done, you're not burned out.
Yeah, it's exactly. I mean, we've got a client right now that we work with that actually sold their business. It was a relatively large business in the small business world. And don't need to worry about money anymore, is opening other businesses now just to fund his philanthropic causes that he wants to support. That's all he's going to do. You know, so I mean, you can still be a business owner. It's just a different deal, right? Because once you've taken that money off the table, it gives you the opportunity to do so much more.
And,
you know, we had a client a couple of years ago that was able to exit for a nice amount of money. He was like, oh, I'm going to do this right now. Well, he's got little younger kids. And it's like, oh, I decided I'm not going to. I'm going to invest in something that's a little bit more easier. I'm going to spend more time with my kids, you know, because they're you can watch them grow up. I mean, there's just some things that you can really do if you think about that asset as a wealth generation tool to really power you in the next phase of your life.
Exactly right. And that's essentially what you just described is our methodology that Chad put into an awesome book called QSI, but there's no real name for it. You know, no one's really talking about this concept, and so many smaller business owners, it's just not even going through their brain. Matter of fact, so many business buyers, when they're first buying this business, like me, when I first bought it, I didn't think to myself, okay, now what? I just got my head down and started working, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't really think to myself, like, how long am I going to do this for? What, you know, to what end am I doing this? You know, why? And most of them don't, you know, they absolutely just do not think with the end in mind. And I think they're just hurting themselves because you're exactly right. They're missing out on a wealth building asset if they look at it accordingly. And to your point, I mean, you got that blessing from those investment companies that own those businesses, right? Like, there's a lot of other things that they do well and not so well too, right? But that lesson you learn from them is incredible, because most business owners of privately held companies, family owned businesses, will never learn that lesson until it's ever potentially, right?
Yeah. It was the first time when I started working on my, I can still remember I was in a board meeting and they're talking about, you know, we got to go to this value, blah, 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 to get our rate of return, blah, blah, blah. Cause you know, it's all about that with the investors. We have to buy for this. We have to sell at this to get our rate of return for our investors on it. I had no idea what the hell that was. And so my mentor that at the time, I didn't ask it right in the board meeting, but afterwards I was like, okay, explain all this to me. And he's like, went through it. And I'm like, God, that makes so much sense. Cause all I'd heard before for the 10 years or so I was working before that was, you know, we're just running a business. It's a family business, running a business, family business, running a business and making money from it. Even when they're big family businesses, they're treated like that a lot of times. And it is powerful when an entrepreneur can look at it as a tool to help them do whatever they want to do in their life. And really fuel that. And that's where I think we come back again to incorporating your business exit strategy early, is that if you're thinking about that end in mind, like you say, I believe you're going to look at your business a little differently and the team you build and the structure of your business, because you just understand that I can't do it all anymore if I'm really trying to create a valuable asset.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cause buyers don't want that. Buyers do not want to ideally buy a job. Most all of the 50 to 100 buyers I interact with per business listing, that's one of the other next questions they ask me after how much is it worth. They also ask me how involved is the owner.
Yeah.
And what does that structure look like? What does that team look like? What does that system look like? Because they don't want to do that, especially if they got a chunk of money. They're smart people. They obviously, if they're able to accumulate a little chunk of money from working for someone else, they're obviously smart and they obviously, but you know, and prudent and thoughtful. And so they built up this little pile of money. They're going to go use an SBA loan. They're going to buy this, you know, $1 million business or whatever. And so they want to especially know that that business owner has not built everything exactly around them. But that's far too common than not, but that's exactly the case, that not only was the system not built, but the owner is a large part of that system, or is that name of the name or the face or the whatever. They play some massively integral role in the success of that business. And so it's like so hard to decouple from that. And that's both those other two businesses, all three of the business I bought were all that way. And I will never do it again. I learned my lesson, man. I will never do it again. Unless I know I'm going in with a team and a structure and an operator already baked and queued up. But most business buyers don't come in with that unless you're a investment bank backed search funder or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all the rest of us are not that sophisticated.
Well, and even in the search fund area where you do have somebody that's going to be coming out of MBA school or something, they have limitations. I mean, they have limitations. Their businesses that they buy are going to have to at least be so far down the road, because the investors got to sign off on them buying it. You know, they can't pull something with no team and the system, poor systems. They still have to have some sort of structure, just not as much as the next level up kind of business would need. But you talked about team and systems. I think it's one of the things that I talk about a lot, because that is, and what I was referring to before, what do you think the advantage for someone that's just going to stay in their business long-term, or someone that's planning on their exit, if they would intentionally focus on creating a team that's really a high-class team, or a quality team, I should say, how much does that affect the value of the businesses and the sellability of the businesses that you're representing?
Immensely. So, I mean, it affects it in multiple different ways, right? So first of all, you are decoupling the owner from the critical success of the business, because now you've got people who are experts in things and knowledgeable in things, and they're providing also their own value, right? And if they truly are excellent team members, it forces that owner to really think to themselves, am I really a really effectual leader? And am I actually delegating properly? Am I actually, you know, building a system that holds people naturally accountable and that they want to be a part of and they want to show up to every day, and they produce their own results without my direct constant interference? Because if they are, they're then also providing value in their business. Sorry, gotcha. It happened again.
Gotcha.
That team is then creating value in the business as well.
Yeah.
And is basically generating more revenue, generating more profit, yeah, like beyond what you're capable of doing. So that naturally by itself, if it's a good team, you've been a good leader to them, built some accountability, some structure, some support in that system. Now all of a sudden, this is growing well beyond what you could do in your own individual capacity.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden you can work on other stuff within the business, or what your strengths are within the business. Mm-hmm. And your 1 + 1 = 3, right? Because it's not so much that you guys all have to be working on the same thing. You're working on different things that positively affect the business. So
yeah,
it's both the scale that it brings with the business. It's the decoupling from the owner that it brings. And it's just that much more appealing. So it's going to naturally grow and get bigger and better.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're decoupling it from the owner, so they're more easily replaceable. Yep. And so now you're also opening it up to more types of buyers to be able to purchase you. Even yeah, ones who want to buy it and operate within it, now they get to buy it and they get to choose where they spend their time, not be yeah, forced to spend it where the owner was spending their time before. Or if it's investment backed, whatever, you know, search funder, same yeah, thing. Like then they can come in and they play more CEO and president, focus yep, on other aspects of growth or whatever. So if you're giving yourself more options, you're giving more buyers more options, and giving more types of buyers an option to come in and purchase you, because they don't have to be a certain type of operator. I can't tell you how many times I looked at businesses where the broker specifically positioned it to me as like, this is a perfect owner operator business. And what I translate from that is like, okay, like I will make no money
or yeah,
if I don't go in there and be hands-on every day. So yeah, you're limiting the number of buyers to only that type of buyer too. So when yeah, you go sell a business, you really want to expand and give yourself as many options as possible of types of buyers that approach you. And you, if you limit yourself too much, then you're just going to take that much longer or never potentially sell.
Yeah. Yeah. That team is critical. And you hit so many good points about it. You know, they can scale beyond you as the owner. If you have the right team, they're going to do things better than you and specialize a bit more and get that. And then they're going to decouple you, like you said, because then you shouldn't have to be in that business all the time. You should be able to, you know, let the business run with them taking it in the farther than you could. And you're just making sure that they've got the tools they need to do it.
Exactly. And
yeah, that's good stuff. And I also like, it's a perfect owner operated business. You're right. It's like, all right, that means Damon's in the truck going out and doing the plumbing himself, you know, or something mm-hmm, like that. And yep, that is something that I don't think many buyers you'll run into want to do.
No. There's nothing wrong with it, but then no, you're just limiting yourself to what type of buyer could do it. Or, I mean, ideally, maybe if you ran it that way, 'cause you chose to, that's fine. And then you could back up and then it's not going to skip a beat. That's great. Then you could sell to that exact kind of buyer and then they can come in, or a different type of buyer who maybe doesn't have that license or that skill set or whatever, and they can work on some other portion of the business. And I'm selling a plumbing company right now where that's the case, that if I came in,
there we go, got a bat,
because the current owner's not, then what they could do is just come in and get hands-on with it they chose, and they could kind of build out some capacity or build up the team a little bit more or whatever. But current owner's not set up that way and has really set it up to where she's choosing to work on what part she wants to work on, essentially, right? Yeah. And so now either kind of buyer can come in now, a technician or a manager, right? So by her doing what she's done, like, she's now just given herself more options of types of people that can approach her. But when you limit the options because of how you unintentionally chose to run the business, well, then, yeah, because you didn't start with the end in mind. You didn't think about all that stuff. But it doesn't mean you as the owner can never be hands-on, or all of a sudden you need to, you know, like, pretend like you're not a part of the business at all necessarily. Like, just do it with intentionality, right? Do it with intentionality. And I think it's really smart. When I see some owners, they're not playing kind of the chief cook in all capacities, but instead maybe they play a role that plays to their strengths, that is like, and they have a GM in place or something, and they just go work on sales, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I love seeing that. So yeah, they're an important part of the business, but they are replaceable essentially because they built the system around the business, not the business around the owner. There's a difference, but the owner can still play a role in the business by all means, you know?
Yeah. A system for the business, not a business around the owner. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's great. And the importance of those systems too are pretty, it's remarkable the difference when you go into a business that's, you know, they've taken the time to actually say, this is how we do business here. If you're in this role, this is what you do, or that role, or they've taken something like EOS or predictable success or something like that, and really put the pieces in place, because it makes it easier for the team to cohesively work together and the owner actually to decouple themselves. So when you find these businesses that have taken the time to, you know, they put their work in ahead of time, what do you really think overall, just a guess, is their kind of success rate to sell? If they've taken the time to do it pretty darn good, if you had to look across the board out of 10 businesses, how many of those you think get sold?
Well, the percentage of those businesses is probably back to that, like, 0.1%. Because again, like, these are the ones who've kind of basically been more proactive about this, right?
Yeah.
And so if we're saying, and if we believe that so few owners have actually been really prepared for this, then that's probably that unequal percentage, right? Yeah. Sometimes they accidentally got there, you know, potentially, where they weren't thinking with the end in mind necessarily, but they were wanting to try to scale more. They were wanting to try to be more systematic. They were wanting to try to give themselves time that they could step away or whatever. So if they did that with the intention of trying to give them some more freedom or whatever, then the natural consequence of that is it could be more sellable. But if they weren't also specifically thinking, okay, what would a buyer want, or how could I get highest liquidity? If they weren't thinking with that intention, there's still probably other pieces missing, most good likely, point. Right? So you could still accidentally get there, but you still may not get the full impact unless you're actually thinking about this proactively. But then there's the rest of them who really haven't thought about this proactively. And even if the businesses were a little bigger, to your point, the family run ones where they're paying cousin Bobby a little bit of something to do hardly nothing in the business, and they're doing this and they're doing that, and like, they're doing all these other things where the books aren't run clean and well, the operation isn't really organized, you know, super well, or it's built around personalities and not around a system, or even other family member, you know, personalities or whatever have you, right?
Yep.
Even the bigger ones still make it really hard to decouple all that and pull that all apart and make it really clear for someone externally to see how that all works or how that's all put together. Then all of a sudden now my job gets really hard, because now I got to go untangle all that and like, help me understand this, help me understand that. So it's unfortunately too few owners that are really in that position where they've really done that intentionally or unintentionally. But when they are, oh my gosh, like, it makes my job so easy to then go to market, because it's clear, it's simple. The books are clear and simple. The operation's clear and simple. They actually have things documented about how the process works, you know?
Yeah.
And Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Those things go, not only do they sell, and they have a 90%+ chance of selling, you know, potentially upwards of 100. I hate saying 100% on anything, but I mean, pretty strong likelihood, first of all. But second of all, they probably won't even be on the market that long, or they won't even take that long to sell. So it's both, because sometimes businesses are a overall good business, but have things they need to fix or whatever, or for some other or whatever other factors that might just take them. They may most likely sell, you know, like with us, even the business we take on, rarely are any of them perfect. And, but we'll still take them on if we can, you know, we can look at it through the lens of a buyer and say, yeah, I can see the potential here, the value here. And we'll still take them on and make sure they're really prepped ahead of time. But oftentimes they take a while to sell.
Right? Yeah.
So it might take a year or two because it isn't that attractive for whatever reason. It does have a big blemish on it or whatever, you know, it's got some hair on the frog or whatever the term is, but yeah, so it's both. It's both the likelihood of sale and the speed of sale are ultimately contingent on that. But I mean, the average business takes what, a year or two to sell or something like that when they finally pull the trigger to decide, because part of that reason, they just hadn't prepared up to that point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's easily a year. And we've seen some where it takes, you know, it takes almost 2 years with them too. Mm-hmm. And those are even that were fairly well prepared, you know, because you can get down to the end and people think, oh, I got an offer. Well, yeah. Offers like, I mean, thinking you're going to marry somebody because you had a date.
That's exactly
about what that's like.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. And, you know, so it takes a lot to get to the end, you know, you can get right to the end, last day, ready to sign money, going to exchange, and someone just say, nope, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And, but you bring up a good point, because speed to get sold is really something. And if someone's preparing for their business exit early, they're going to be, hopefully, they're really cognizant and informed on the value of their business, the market value of their business, because that impacts it greatly. Because it's, at the end of the day, it's math, right? Yeah. It's math. There's only so much money someone can pay for your business. And if they, if they've taken the time to get the business to the value that's about what the market value is, and that's fine with them, if they sell it for that, you got a lot better chance of trying to get it sold in a reasonable amount of time.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And not to be so married to that number. That's where, like, people thinking about it as an asset, that they're going to be more decoupled from that. Cause when your identity is so built into your business, like this happens to me literally every day, like, Devin, it's worth whatever, kajillion dollars. I'm like, no, not really, you know? But, and ultimately what I try to explain, but it's so hard when you have so much psychology, you have so much blood, sweat, and tears in this. I get this, right? But at the same time, you have to think more objectively, because it is just math, and it's just also market, you know?
Yeah.
It's just what people are willing to pay for it, what banks are willing to lend on it.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of it. And so just owning that fact, and then instead just using that liquidity then to think about, what am I going to do with that liquidity?
Yeah.
It's less about the number you get and more about what you do with it next. That's a really big deal, right? And because most business owners aren't going to get, most likely, that major life-changing amount of money, most likely, you know, and that's okay. Then just plan for that sooner, and then move that money forward into the next asset that could do that for you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or whatever. And that's what we teach. But yeah, if they just decoupled themselves a little bit from that, just psychologically a little bit more, then they'd be a little less married to that number. But even if they just, Chad Peterson, my partner, who started the company, he's about to go kind of on a speaking tour this year, and he's going to do one of the TED Talks. And he let me look at his script and like what he's planning on talk about. And it's like only call to action out of the whole thing, the whole conversation, the whole talk. His last call to action is just, business owner, please go, like, know what the value of your business is, please. Like, don't wait till the end to finally decide to then learn, when you're already kind of beyond the point of where you probably should have been in terms of your passion cycle. And then now you decide to figure out what that number is, you know, and don't listen to, you know, Bob down the street who heard someone who thought he heard or knew someone who sold something. Like, that's not a valuation. That's just in the ether. Don't watch Shark Tank and try to run your valuation based on Shark Tank, right?
Yeah.
Like, go to someone who does this and chat with them about it, and make sure you have a good, clear idea, and then just own the number, and then decide based on that where you're going to go. And ideally do it. I mean, I try to encourage everyone, do it as if it was like your tax returns, basically, right? Just
yep.
at the after your tax returns are done,
yep.
you then go turn right around and you go speak to an expert that does this, right? And just get their take on it every single year. And that's yep. part of your decision-making process at that yep. point, you know?
Yep. As we're going through it with clients, we look at it. Oftentimes we look at it quarterly or monthly at the trailing value of the business just to see what we're doing with it over time as we're going. Because, you know, when in our process, we get to a certain point and we go, okay, it's time to start thinking about marketing the business because we're getting near or past the value, net value. Because yeah. you always had to worry about that is, you know, because there are significant fees in selling a business. You yeah. got to make sure that you're going to take out of it or what you need after that. But yeah, that valuation is key because it is math. And I know the blood, sweat and tears, you'd like to get paid for all of it, but honestly, sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, well, Devin, it's been awesome talking to you today, man. And I just want to say one thing. Ronald, thanks for showing up today, man. And I appreciate you stopping by and dropping the comments. I want to also say thanks for Michael Paterano that's joining us there on Instagram. And Bob Feathers, my friend from Boston, thanks for dropping in there as well. But you've got some stuff coming up this summer we were talking about before I get on. I want you to have a chance to say you got a local event coming up here in Seattle in June. What's going on with that so that people can be following you, Devin, and getting ready for that?
Yeah, yeah. No, thanks for bringing that back up. Yeah, so June 1st, we're still kind of working out some of the details, but here in the Seattle area, we're going to host a business owner event where we're basically going to go into detail about all these things we just talked about of like, plan your exit strategy now, essentially. We're going to talk about business valuation. We're going to talk about if you don't like that number, okay, what are some avenues or paths you can go down to fix those things? We're going to talk a little more about this concept QSI and how to look at your business more as an asset. And what do you do with that asset? And what choices do you have to do with that asset? And then just, yeah, just have a good day of just networking and fun and, you know, get business owners just thinking about this, trying to shake them a little bit and say, come on, let's give some thought to this, please, ahead of time. So
yeah,
June 1st, still got to determine some information, but on when and how and some of the logistics there, but it's for sure going to happen in the Seattle area. And so if people want to learn about all the specifics of that, they can just follow me and I'll post about it regularly once we start, you know, unfolding some of the details.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. And on LinkedIn, it's Devin W. Craig. If you, you're going to get out there and follow Devin, do that. He's got drops a lot of good comment out or content. Excuse me. I put his name up there so you can see it on the screen now and do that. But thanks so much for being here today, man.
Oh yeah. My pleasure. Thanks so much, Damon.
You bet. Well, hang out just a minute, Devin. We'll wrap up after we're off the air, but I want to thank everyone else for showing up today. Thanks. We love you out there in the comments. Love you listening. Thanks for all you do. And if you know somebody that would benefit from this, drop the link to them, have them come in and listen next time. And if you got in this late, go back to the beginning if you're interested in it, because Devin had a lot of incredible information for business people. We're out for now, and we'll see you again next week.